Went up and grabbed him and acted like he was just an old acquaintance, you know, and pulled him off one side, say, he says, "They'll kill you. You don't know what you've done. This is slavery here in this country." They were beating that Negro to death because he defended the white woman. He said, "Now, for you taking his part, they'll sure kill you." So he talked to him and talked to him in a kind of a private conversation, you know, and they passed him right by looking for this other man. The next morning, first news they got there, they killed two other men, thinking they had caught the one, found out each time it was different ones. But he got out of Missouri, out of that part of it, and went into Richmond, the other side of Richmond, and took up some ground. It already belonged to a big slave owner, but he did some work for him, and he sold him a lot of ground very cheap, and he was going to farm it. And that's why we always say that he was from Missouri, because his wife gave birth to two other children there in Richmond. But that was long after Mary was quite a big girl, and they'd moved to America. These two babies were born. And then anyhow, that was how that came about. But he found out the next day that what he had done, and they moved him away up close to his uncle. So people wouldn't recognize him. The good thing was nothing but the light of bonfires and they had found him. But that was one of the first experiences he had in America. Then he wished he was back in England, where they didn't beat people to death. But those babies, when the mother died, Mary, she had gotten to be 13 years old then, and she told her father, "Father, we're going to Zion." And he said, "Oh no, we've got all this ground now, and we've found coal on it. We can't go now. We'll be rich. We'll mine this coal." She says, "If you don't go, Father, I'll go and I'll take the babies." So finally, they found out she was determined. He sold his holdings. Do you know what he got out of it?
No, sir.
A wagon with a cover on it, a team of oxen, and a little cow and her heifer calf.
Good, nice.
Sold the whole thing. They got as far as St. Louis, and they were told by his uncle to go right to St. Louis to the Immigration Bureau there and asked him about how to get to Utah. And that's what he did. But they misinformed him. They told him to go straight west and they'd hit the Platte River. Instead of telling him to go north first until they hit the Platte and then west, they said all you'd have to do then is follow the river on the west, on the north side of the river, north and west, and you'll go right onto the old Mormon Trail.
You told me that story of how they came out. I'd like to ask you another question about your father. You said he was a horticulturalist. Did he improve upon any plants, or did he help out Lehigh in any sense?
Yes. The red currants, for instance, were little bits of things on a bunch 2 inches long and the size of, much smaller than a small pea. Father started to work on that first because he'd got kern cuttings from a fellow up in Alpine. He trimmed his orchard farm and his bushes for cuttings, and he brought them down and he started them to grow, and then when they started got big enough to bear fruit, he would inoculate the blossoms onto one particular one. Then he would keep cutting off pieces of that one and destroying the others. And he got to the what we used to call the cherry kern. Then he sold that first to a Iowa company, sold the right to it, and they developed the cherry kern, which is larger than a big pea. So that's why we outdone the whole country around here. He went right into horticulture, raised raspberries and those giant kerns, and he went up American Fork Canyon and improved the old black kerns that are up there. We call them bedbug kerns up there, you know, until they're as big as marbles.
Yes.
And then he would sell that. And everything that he tried, potatoes. The Irish potato was a new thing from England. They didn't have Irish potatoes there. They had sweet potatoes, but no Irish potatoes. But he improved them, made a half a dozen varieties. One with purple skin. It was a beautiful potato, but when they boil it, make potatoes look indelible. So that didn't... But he was always doing something like that. Improved the wild raspberries up in American Fork Canyon, which they're so small you can't get them off whole. They're good when you get them off and sweet, but our raspberries used to be 1.5 inches long. Wouldn't take very many of them to fill a cup. And when we put them on the market, everybody would buy them. They'd pay 25 cents for a cup of those when they wouldn't pay 5 cents for a cup of the others, because they're of the size, and they were soft. You know, the old, if you ever eaten the berries up in American Fork Canyon?
Yes, sir.
The seeds, nothing but a little seed in there, and they get in your teeth, and if you eat too many of them, they give you the colic, and oh, there's all kinds of drawbacks. But these didn't. They were just as sweet as honey, and will make the best preserves. And Mother, she used to treat the neighbors around with a roly-poly, she called them. She'd make cake and roll it real thin, then put those and roll it in, then cut it in like we have donuts now. And she'd put that in hot lard and sell them. And everybody wanted to start in those raspberries. So now they're universal. He sold the right to them to the Iowa Seed Company. That was all about in the 90s, late 90s. Now that's the only kern that's on the market.
Did they bear his name or
no,
anything?
No, he called them the giant kern, giant red is what he called them. No, he never thought of that, I guess.
Would you tell me a little about your home life before your parents passed away, as far as school or the church you went to or the games you'd play just as a young boy while your parents were still living?
Well, by the time I was old enough to be on my own, you might say, my older brothers were all married. The family was practically all married and dead. There was one sister and a brother and myself left of the family. But my education was very, very limited. I was home, Mother taught me to read, and we didn't used to think about going to college. I remember when the first time they told us about Mazur College in Provo. Well, I was on my own then, practically, as far as money-wise is concerned. I didn't bother about it. But I'll tell you how I got into reading. Mother used to, she was a great Mormon. And somehow or other, she got a book the story of the Book of Mormon. And she'd read that, I'd sit on her lap. The other kids would, and they weren't very affectionate, I guess. I had one brother just older than me, then one sister older than he, then another brother older than her. But they all went to school, and but I come a little bit lately. And mother'd give up having any other children when I come. And but I guess I paid for it. She sure loved me, and everyone else did. I guess I had a good disposition.
How did she teach you to read, you were telling me?
She had this story in the Book of Mormon. And I always used to go to sleep on her lap. I guess I'd done that ever since I used to nurse. I don't remember that part of it. But when she put on my little nightie, they called it, it was kind of a, you'd step in from the neck of it, but it had legs in it. And then she'd button that up, and I'd sit on her lap, and she'd read that to me, and I'd watch every word. You know, she'd point it with her finger. And then she'd finally go back a few pages after months of reading. She'd go back, I'll see if you can do this one. And over a page she'd read maybe a couple of months ago. And she'd point out the letters. And quite often I could say the word. Such as any three-letter word, I could say them right off. And until they got up Moroni and things like that, you know.
Yes,
then I had to have help. That's, it wasn't long. I remember I learned to read all in one winter, just sitting on mother's lap. Then she used to get all kinds of these little storybooks. They used to come, they didn't have them in the stores then, but old, usually widows in Lehi, about Christmas time, about the 1st of December, they'd come around peddling books. Maybe you can remember back that far.
No, sir.
Well, these ladies had come, they were on their own, mother would always buy those story books. They were ABC books to start with, A, and then the story. And yeah, and I remember the first day I went to school with my sister Annie. She was in the chart class, and I was just a little bit of a fellow. But in my lesson before, that night I'd sat on there, and mother had this book open, and she had a chicken here. And on the next page had a rabbit, and next some little mice and so on, you know. And under it would be H-E-N, hen. And so this particular time, that was my lesson. And I went to school, I was just that little red-headed kid, you know, and Annie was in the chart class. But I could talk. And Angie Webb was the teacher, and she held up a picture of a chicken. It was an old white chicken. She held it up and said, "What is this?" And the kids stuck up their hands. "That's a chicken." "Well, what kind of a chicken?" "That's a hen." "Okay." And then she'd go on, next picture, and so on. That would be the reading lesson. And so she, the next day I went back with you, with Annie, her name was. That was pretty nice. Mother let me go back. So Angie Webb says, "Who can spell hen?" Nobody could spell hen. And I jumped up, I said, "H-E-N, hen." And that was my name from then on. I had a long time living that down. But I was the only kid in that class that knew how to spell.
Would you tell me how far you went in school and describe the classroom?
By the time I would be promoted because of my age, but all from the 5th grade on, I couldn't say that I went through any. I didn't go diploma. I went up in Idaho teaching the Indians how to thin beads when I should have been taking my eighth grade. So that's as far as I got. I didn't go through the grade schools, but I didn't need to. I could read. I could write better than any of them. I could even read better than my brother and sisters, because I'd always see the picture, though, that word was.
Did you have to pay to go to school?
The older kids didn't, but the first private school, the first public school was right here on this corner. And whether they paid for me to go or not, I don't know, but the men that did, all Provo men that worked, had the contract to building that old first, boarded at my mother's home right over here. It was right close, you see, and the only house close to it. So we had to change our living room into a great big long table. And we changed one of the bedrooms, knocked the wall partition out of the kitchen. It was a slope, you know, lean to make a great big stove. Well, it had two stoves in it, one to boil things and one to fry. And each one had an oven, so we had 15 to 18 men all the time. Mother had to feed besides we kids. And she didn't alone.
Was this the school you attended?
Yes.
It was a pretty new school then.
Yes. Well, my two older brothers and one sister went to this school. Well, I was getting up to spell H-E-N.
What was the name of the school?
Eunice, what was this school called? Central School.
Where?
The old Central School, wasn't it? Then afterwards they started one in the old meeting house down the first ward, just the first and second grade, and then Mr. Ross started to teach school first, second, and third grade, and that was the Ross building. And up here in the fourth ward they made another school to teach the first three grades, Sago Lily School, and over here they started another one out. Eunice went to it out in the New Survey, we used to call it. That's out. That was closer to the other school, to her, to go to school. She lived down on the river.
Could you describe the classroom and the lunchroom and things?
Yes. There wasn't any lunchrooms. You just sat in your seat. And if you got hungry, you could take out a piece and eat it. No questions asked. So lots of kids didn't have any dinner to eat at the time of noon. But there were two benches together, one top, and there's about this wide, and two kids sit, one on each, and there would be three rows of those.
How did they heat the school?
Stoves.
You didn't have you had a stove in individual room?
Mm-hmm. Each room had a stove.
What were the ages of the kids in the class? Were they all the same age, or did they have two or three classes combined?
Oh, sometimes there's big kids in the chart class, people, immigrants, you know, coming in, people that were flocking in here, them all over the country, and they were mostly country people that had joined the church. They'd come here and free schools, and send school. So we had all kinds. I didn't feel out of place when I jumped up and said H-E-N.
What was the chart class?
That was a picture, just a picture, on scrolls. You'd have, like a window blind, and be this wide, I guess, at the top, and a series of those things. And the different grades was on them. One would be big A, little A, big B, little B. And then under those two would be written handwriting. You had to learn all three. When you learned A, you learned the big block alphabet, and the A was written alphabet, and A in words, such as.
Then the chart class was actually reading class.
Reading writing. Class from a chart.
Reading and writing from a chart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they call it a chart class.
Yes, I can remember that. That's But through Mother's help, I guess I missed a whole lot of those classes. Because as soon as I was able, Father got rheumatism and couldn't work. And his boys had got old, and he'd built them homes, and then they'd start to drink, and he'd get them out of trouble and everything until he began to run pretty sharp. I remember the last two dividends he ever collected. One was when people would go out, and that kept us in groceries. So he had big investment in that, because they only paid 2 or 3 cents on the dollar dividend. And then the Provo mill, they, you can get up to 5 cents on the dollar until they went broke. And then Father lost about $10,000 on that.
Would you tell me about the last few years of your parents' life and how they happened to die?
Yes, Father. Do you remember how old Father was, Eunice, when he died? He was in his late 70s. She'll get you the dates. But the whole family was married with the exception of me. And I was keeping most of them. My older brother, older than me, never even had a stick of furniture when he was married. And I furnished their place, dishes and everything.
Did your father and mother die of just old age, natural causes?
No, neither one of them was old. Hardships. And as they got old, they got rheumatic. Father had a beard,